Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Here's the game, ladies and gentlemen. With no timeouts left, the Jaguars will not be able to stop the clock. Gerard barks out the signals in the shotgun, takes the snap, drops. Now he's going to run, and David's going to get in and more. He's at the 25-yard line, stays on his feet, 20, there he goes, 15, and he's down at the 10. How about that one? 40 seconds to play in the wild card. The snap, the placement, the kick up on the way. Scobie drills it, and the Jaguars retake the lead, 31-29, with 37 seconds to play.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, good morning, everybody. 2 days in a row back over at the bank, TIAA Bank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
Still quiet around here. Not as quiet as it's going to get, apparently, next week. Apparently, next week is really...
Everyone's out.
They're all out. They're clearing out. I don't think you're on vacation until the following week.
Yeah, I'll be out the week after that.
I think we'll be at World Headquarters next week, from the sound of things. It's going to be crickets, as it kind of is anyway.
It's
around here.
It's 4th of July week, yeah.
That's right. We did see... The overseer, though, I'm not talking about Tom Coughlin here. I'm talking about Shad Khan was around,
yeah,
poking his head in the studio yesterday, which was always good to see Shad Khan. I like to see him, you know. I wonder what brings him to the stadium on that particular June day. You
right.
know what I mean? When there's not a whole lot seemingly going on.
Oh, sure. And to live a life where today I'm going to go wander through the building of the professional sports organization I own.
Yeah.
Because I can.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Go check it out.
It's pretty
Maybe
awesome.
I'll go get in the cold tub. You know, I've had a few aches and pains.
Do whatever. It's your tub.
It's your tub, man. You rock on, Shad. Still, you know, still, I'm just not begging anymore, but I'm still open to be adopted.
Sure.
I know I'm a little old for the typical adoption scenario,
yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to grovel anymore about it unless I thought that would help. you know, we talk about this time of the year, you don't want anything from the NFL team saying, we are aware, right? That's if it starts out a statement, we are aware, that's usually a bad thing. We are aware of the circumstances surrounding the arrest of X. And that hasn't happened with the Jags. The other thing you don't want in the offseason, Tony, and you never want with your football team, not that you ever want arrests, right? But it's just like when you've got this long period now and you're just holding your breath a little bit as an organization, I think every – sports organization. Not that there are particularly guys you worry about more so here in Jacksonville than anywhere else. It's just the nature of a lot of young men with a lot of money, left to their own devices out there. And sometimes these guys, like anybody else, can make a bad decision. The other thing you don't want are any kind of injuries, certainly that set you back. It was bad enough that Josh Allen banged his knee and didn't practice during minicamp. Hopefully he'll be fine for training camp. I have no reason at this point.
They said he would be, yeah.
Right, no reason to think he won't be. And then you see the story yesterday about Jonah Williams.
Yeah.
Keeping in mind that OTAs are over. I mean, everyone's in the protective bubble right now. And that Jonah Williams, who I believe, did he end up going? He was the first offensive lineman selected in the draft, if I'm not mistaken, right? Was it Cincinnati, like the 11th pick, I want to say, something like that?
He was somewhere in there, yeah.
I know they took him, and I'm pretty sure they had like the 10th or 11th pick. And I'm almost positive he was the first offensive lineman selected in this draft because it was he and Juwan Taylor most frequently being talked about. Andre Dillard was kind of the dark horse to maybe slide in there. And
yeah, he was the first offensive lineman taken 11th overall by Cincinnati.
11th overall, all right. And a lot of people thought, well, a lot of pundits anyway, thought, well, this guy's going to have to move the guard in the National Football League, right? We heard all about the short arms of Jonah Williams coming out of the University of Alabama. Then you found out they're like an eighth of an inch shorter than Joe Thomas, who's going to go in the Hall of Fame the first year of his eligibility, right, after stacking up Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl. For a losing franchise for all those years in Cleveland. Then some people thought, all right, well, he's going to be limited to playing right tackle in the National Football League. If he doesn't have to move inside, right tackle is going to be his spot in the National Football League. He's not going to have the quickness or what. I don't know what that he's not going to be able to stay with these guys. The Bengals got him in, took one peek at him, said, yep, that's our left tackle right there. That's our starting left tackle. Yeah,
it's not often you have a prospect coming into a draft where, look, you talk about versatility from a guy. It's like you would like him to be able to do more than
it's
one
great.
Thing. That's fantastic. But it's not often that a guy that you're talking about maybe wind up at, he's a borderline top 10 pick in an NFL draft where it's like, we'll take a look at him at four positions on the offensive line.
Left guard, right guard.
Like, you usually don't get that kind of storyline with a guy. But, yeah, Cincinnati, once they got a look at him, we're like, yeah, that's our left tackle.
Yeah, that's the guy we thought we were drafting,
yeah.
Right? Like, they obviously looked at him before they selected him. But immediately they basically said, yep, there we go, position solved. We had a miserable offensive line. That's the key to turning the offensive line around. You find out yesterday that it's more than likely, according to the reporting, that Jonah Williams is going to miss the entirety of his rookie campaign because of a torn labrum in his shoulder. And putting aside, I suppose, because we don't know the specific circumstances, I kept thinking, did he have an injury like during the draft process? I couldn't remember. I couldn't find anything. They said he had kind of a, quote, mystery injury at OTAs and that the Bengals had cut him off from speaking to the local media about it. And so there was some – definitely some trepidation about what was going to come down the line when they eventually found out more about it. Correct me if I'm wrong. These are non-contact practices that they're participating in organized team activities. Now, look, again, you could get hurt in the weight room. You could get hurt, I guess, you know, if you're in a drill going up against a bag. It's non-contact player on player. That doesn't mean you're not firing out and hitting a heavy bag or a blocking sled or something along those lines. So, however he did it, he tore the labrum in his shoulder and is expected to miss the entirety of his rookie season. And you think of it in that context. First of all, the Bengals and the luck they've had, which was terrible. The Jags got Cedric Ebwehi this offseason, right? A former Bengal first-round pick. He was, just by default, one of the most successful first-round picks they've had in the last half decade in his rookie season because he only missed 11 games. It's crazy what the Bengals have gone through over the last 5 years. Ebwehi in 2015 missed 11 games with a knee injury his rookie season. William Jackson then comes in. He gets a pec injury. He misses every game in his rookie season. John Ross, he doesn't just get on the field,
right?
He's just not very good. 17 snaps played and not a single catch for a top 10 selected wide receiver. Billy Price last year, another offensive lineman, missed six games because of a foot injury. Now Jonah Williams likely out for the year. So that's three guys who basically made zero impact, and I'm including John Ross in that, and then Billy Price, by the virtue of only missing six games, I guess, edges out Cedric Ebwehi as the best Bengals rookie performer from the first round in the last 5 years. You look at, man, how things could have gone differently for this football team. I don't know how the Jags felt about Juwan Taylor versus Jonah Williams, right? And we may never know for sure. We may find that out along the way. But had Josh Allen gone to the New York Giants and they passed on Landry Jones, and obviously the Jaguars were not going to take a quarterback there as things played out. They had their choice of they could have had Dwayne Haskins if they wanted him. What if they had taken Jonah Williams? Now, if they had taken him, he would not have been in Cincinnati doing whatever drill he was doing at that exact moment. So maybe he doesn't get hurt, but maybe he does, right? Maybe it was just one of those deals that however you feel about it, was he fated to get injured? I don't believe that. But let's say you were the team that had drafted Jonah Williams. The Jags, look, they've had their share of that. They had it with Dante Fowler immediately. You knew first practice. At least maybe Bengals fans had a month and a half to think good thoughts about their first round pick this time around.
I wonder what, because, you know, when the Dante Fowler injury happened and we knew it was the ACL, we've seen athletes over and over and over again come back from that ACL.
Right.
And in today's NFL, you can be fine coming back from that injury. I don't know what it looks like, you know, over the course of the last 10 years for offensive linemen that have to miss a year for shoulder surgery. Like,
right.
I don't know what that does to an offensive lineman's career. We'd be having that discussion certainly today in Jacksonville as to what it means. We know that shoulder injuries that piled up is what cut Tony Boselli's career
short.
No doubt. You know, that was a while ago now in NFL terms, because that was at a point where an ACL was basically the end of your career
right,
in the NFL.
That's almost full decades worth of
right.
medicine and advancements.
So I assume it's way better than it used to be, but I do wonder, if you're talking about a guy that you drafted in the first round, if they have to miss their entire rookie season due to an injury, what is like the long-term viability of those kind of players and those kind of picks? Because I can't imagine it's very good.
No, I can't either, but I don't have the hard, cold numbers on that. But just, you know, whenever you think what could have been, it could have easily played out that scenario where the Jags, maybe they go Hawkinson there, right? And that's just the simple
sure.
answer, and that's who they take, is TJ Hawkinson, the tight end out of Iowa. And that could have been it, and they end up with Juwan Taylor, and then they do something different in the third round instead of drafting Josh Oliver. So who knows how it would have played out. But just, you know, when you worry about the run of misfortune that the Jags have had for a variety of reasons, at least, you know, in terms of this year's rookie class, let's be happy that and really the veterans as well, nothing significant injury-wise, at least, that it appears on the surface. You know, like we said, Josh Allen missed some time. Doesn't look like he's going to miss significant time due to this once training camp rolls around. So let's hope that that continues to be the case. Just bad luck for Jonah Williams out there. Today's question of the day, not touching on that specifically. It's presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. Saw a sports book yesterday, Tony, posted their odds to win the Associated Press NFL MVP Award. They have to be very specific because there are a lot of different outlets that give out the MVP. Typically, when you're talking about the guy won an X amount of MVP awards, you're talking about the Associated Press Award. That's kind of
yes.
the standard that everyone talks about. Patrick Mahomes has the shortest odds of anyone on the board at 4-1. So he's the favorite to win MVP coming off a 50-touchdown season. It goes all the way down to 300-1 for guys like George Kittle, Zach Ertz, and Tariq Cohen, if you want to get in on that. We'll take a look at this list a little bit today, because our question of the day is this. If you had $1,000 to wager in a sports book, we tweeted out the list of odds. Which 1 to 5 players would you bank on? And you can split your bankroll up any way you like. If you think, hey, I'm going to take the full 1,000 and I'm going to bet it on Leonard Fournette at 200-1, baby, and I'm going to have 200K coming my way. You could do that because Leonard Fournette is on the board at 200-1, as is Nick Foles. But if you wanted to be a little bit crafty and split it up in any denomination from 1 to 5 players, how would you best distribute your money? In other words, who do you think have the best odds, the most compelling odds to make you put a little cash on it in Vegas, which is becoming more and more a prominent part of the entire football culture?
Certainly is.
Right now, and not only in Vegas, but a lot of other places as well. So we'll take a look at that list today and talk about it as we go along, weigh in on a number of other NFL issues as well. If you'd like to get in, talk Jaguar football with us, you can do it in a variety of ways. You can give us some feedback on social media, at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony on Twitter, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or as always, on the phone line or the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures at the same number, and that would be 641-1010. Just getting underway, Jaguars Today on this Wednesday morning. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at the bank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, ET is back at World Headquarters. The other pair of us over at TIAA Bank Field on this Wednesday morning, talking Jaguar and NFL football with you as we do every day from 10 to noon. As we went into the break there, Tony, you had mentioned, 20 years ago, ACL still at times could be like a death sentence to your career.
Yeah.
You know, would guys ever come back from this injury and be anything close to it? We've seen since then a lot of really rapid recoveries. Probably the most impressive one was Adrian Peterson, came back in something like 6 months and didn't seem like he had lost anything at that point in time. And ET brings up on the break, you guys remember that injury Robert Edwards had. Yes. And refreshing ourselves, just kind of going through the Google machine, it was such a devastating injury. He tore pretty much everything in his knee. Tore the ACL, the PCL, the MCL, the medial, the posterior, the anterior, the lateral collateral ligament. He only tore it partially. Come on, Robert.
Oh, dodge that one.
Right, dodged a blow there. But they said the most significant injury he had was he cut the artery somehow in his leg in the process of doing this. And so they sutured it up as best they could. I mean, imagine that. Your artery's like just gushing blood.
Yeah.
Right? And I can't imagine how quickly you would need to be inside that guy's leg to save him, perhaps bleeding to death internally. I don't know how it would work, but they told him that if the blood flow doesn't slow down, they had already sutured it, or if these sutures pop out, which was a possibility, we're going to have to take the leg off. I mean, here's a guy who had just come out of Georgia, went to the New England Patriots, who at the time, remember, the Jets had signed Belichick, and then Belichick backed out a day later and decided to go to the Patriots, and the NFL ruled that they had to give him the compensation of Curtis Martin, which was pretty good compensation. They got a Hall of Fame player.
Sure.
Goes to show you the value of the coach versus a Hall of Fame running back. What would you rather have? Take the coach, right? Curtis Martin, outstanding player, didn't win anything in terms of postseason honors, any of that stuff. So Robert Edwards comes in as a rookie. He honestly had a very Leonard Fournette-like rookie season, you know, because he averaged 3.8 yards a carry, scored 9 rushing touchdowns, had a little over 1,100 yards, but you didn't have as many guys, I don't think, at the time. You probably had Terrell Davis, had some pretty gaudy yards per carry numbers, probably Barry Sanders. There were a few. Seems like now you have so many more guys. I was looking this up last week in relation to talking about Fournette. There were just maybe 15 full-time running backs, at least, that had 4.5 yards a carry last year. So 3.8, I think, probably was a little bit more towards the norm back then. But regardless, he was what they felt was the answer, the replacement to Curtis Martin.
Yeah, 3.8 tied you for 22nd.
This year.
That year. Yeah.
Well, that's still not all that spectacular.
Right there with, how about these names, Jerome Bettis and Eddie George.
Well, yeah, Jerome Bettis was always, both of those guys were always low yard per carry guys. Now, does Mike that Allstott only,
in that range,
is that only like full-time running backs you're looking at? Or does
I just went to the year and did it by yards per attempt.
Do you see anybody in there that doesn't look like a run? Like, you know, are there any wide receivers that got like 10 reverses? And
No, I don't see much of that.
All right, because it's hard now. If you just go to like a CBS Sports NFL stats page, you get a lot of that, and you got to filter it out.
Yeah, but Terrell Davis and Garrison Hurst tied for the league lead that year, 5.1 an attempt.
Yeah, Terrell Davis is always a big time yards per carry guy. So maybe it was not that dissimilar from what it is today. But either way, Robert Edwards was, they had hoped, a rising star. Hard to believe he was 24 years old. Why was he so old?
I don't know.
As a rookie running back.
Yeah, maybe some Georgia fan knows the answer to that question.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure we could find out like what the backstory was. But that seems incredibly old to be coming out of college, especially at that position. Now, granted, you can only come out so early, but you know, you did have juniors coming out of for the draft back then. But Robert Edwards, man, he came back, and it took him to 2002. His rookie year was 1998. Didn't play in 99, 2000, 2001. So 3 whole seasons on the sidelines. And when he came back, he had all of 20 carries in his 28-year-old season in 2002 for a little over 100 yards, by the way. He finally got that average up over 5 and did score a touchdown. I would imagine for him, you know, obviously you have it taken away from you basically at that age. It was probably an amazing accomplishment to even get back on the field.
Oh,
when you think to that moment as you're lying there, and he injured it in, what was it, like a flag football game on the beach, something like that, right, in Hawaii?
Yeah.
And they have since cut out so much of this stuff that goes on. But, you know, you think back, and we've brought this up many times over the years, go back to the Superstars competition in the offseason when you had all these different athletes from all these different sports competing in weightlifting and, you know, obstacle courses and all this stuff. And imagine that today, with the value of contracts, who would you actually get to show up? By the way, what's happened? Have you seen any of the latest on what's happened with this Ted Ginn 40-yard dash contest?
No.
Have you seen?
I knew about it. Yeah.
You know, Ginn challenged anybody, like $10,000. Anybody who wants to race me, any football player wants to race me, and some high school runner wanted to race him. I don't know how that's all going to work out, but so they organized a 16-man bracketed 40-yard dash contest where you would go like head to head versus another guy. And, you know, it'd be an elimination thing, like you're down to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, just kind of a bracketed system. Mm-hmm. They announced a bunch of names, big names, some of these. Alvin Kamara going to do this, and some other very well-known names, including Ted Ginn, obviously. And then they announced, yeah, we're going forward with it. Some of the names had changed, obviously, I think. But I'd be surprised if at the time it all rolled around. I mean, these guys do run. It's not like they're not running 40s. But you get in the position where you're in the starting blocks next to somebody and you don't want to be embarrassed. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Like, no, I hear you,
the,
yeah.
The strain you're going to – is any NFL team going to be cool with anybody, any one of their players participating in something like that?
Probably wouldn't be super excited about it.
And I would think you wouldn't have any protection either. Like, it's
– I don't see how you would.
If you get injured in a pickup basketball game –
yeah.
They can come after your contract. They, you know what I mean? So that's why you hear about stories sometimes in different sports. Oh, I tripped over my dog. I did this, you know, and it's just like pure accident because it's not a behavior that's prohibited. Most of these professional contracts have a list of behaviors that are specifically prohibited because they're deemed too risky to injury.
Sure, and I'm sure beach football is on that list and has been for a while now. In the league, looking at it, it appears you had to assume there was going to be at least one medical redshirt would have been involved, would have been my assumption with Robert Edwards, why he didn't get to the league till he was 24. He did have a medical redshirt year at Georgia, and reading through it, like, he had knee problems every year at Georgia, which makes it a much more curious decision. Why are you playing beach football for a guy who has a history of knee issues on top of it? Just an unnecessary risk for a guy young in his career.
But you didn't think of it. I don't know. I don't remember how they thought of it back then. You know what I mean? It's 21 years ago, or I guess 20 and a half years ago. It was probably like January of 1999, excuse me, when it happened to Robert Edwards. I don't know. Was there discussion back then? Maybe there was, you know, maybe in some circles. And I would imagine, you know, attitudes change over time. Now you get a guy like Kawhi Leonard who – more and more, after the Kevin Durant injury with Golden State and the re-injury, people are looking back at Kawhi Leonard shutting it down in San Antonio last year and saying, well, this guy's smart, right? And
sure.
At the time, people want to say, well, is he soft? Is he quitting? Is he doing all these things? No, he's protecting himself, and he is his own investment. His body is his future, and now he's in line after a healthy season leading Toronto to a championship to get an absurd amount of money on the free agent market. You know, it's not like Kevin Durant's going to go to the poorhouse, by the way, but that's the kind of position you find yourself in now. But even then, I mean, Kawhi Leonard has been one of the best players in the NBA for a while now. He's a MVP in the finals prior to ever getting to Toronto. And yet people were questioning whether this guy had heart and desire and toughness because he shut it down because he knew his body better than anybody else.
Kevin Falk was a 1999 pick, right? Like, he was the next year after Edwards, wasn't he?
I'll take your word for it. It sounds
that feels
in that range.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll look to make sure. I do wonder, would the Patriots have ever selected Kevin Falk, who was such – he was never the premier player for him, but was such an important player for those early championship teams there in New England. I wonder if they never make that pick if Robert Edwards doesn't get hurt. Yeah.
Maybe not. Kevin Falk, by the way, who still to this day is a top five all-time rusher in Southeastern Conference history, which can win you a bar bet or two.
Yeah, because Edwards was a first-round pick. Falk was a second-round pick.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 46 overall.
I wonder if they ever would have taken him if Edwards hadn't
maybe
got
not.
Hurt.
You know, but who knows how it would have worked out. Maybe right. They don't take Kevin Faulk, but maybe Robert Edwards goes on and becomes that perennial 4.5 yards per carry guy.
Maybe.
You don't know how it would work out. Suck for Robert Edwards regardless. can you give me the other four players that are in the top five all-time rushers in Southeastern Conference history? Kevin Faulk is number four.
I would assume Herschel.
Herschel's number one with 5,259 yards.
Emmitt?
Emmitt Smith is not. Emmitt's down at number 11, just below 4,000 yards.
Eric Rhett?
Eric Rhett has got more yards than Emmitt. He's Florida's all-time leading rusher, but he's seventh all-time in SEC history.
Derrick Henry?
Derrick Henry is incorrect. Derrick Henry didn't start,
yeah,
obviously.
I was thinking him or Ingram.
But Derrick Henry's 20th all-time with 3,591 yards, which is better than Mark Ingram. I don't see Ingram in the top 20 right here. T.J. Yeldon, by the way, 27th all-time in SEC history. Herschel's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Chubb is number two with 4,769. Darren McFadden with 4,590.
Yeah.
Faulk, and then Bo Jackson was pretty good.
Bo.
He snuck in there with a little over 4,300 yards. But
good old Bo.
You know, Kevin Faulk is really good at LSU, obviously. I mean, the numbers back that up. But when you if you watched him primarily as an NFL player, you'd never guess that guy was that storied.
No, yeah.
You know, at the time. And I believe at one point, I guess when his career ended, he was number two only to Herschel because Nick Chubb and Darren McFadden both surpassed him after the fact. Still pretty.
Played a dozen years in the NFL.
Right. And that was the mold for the Patriot running back, too, right? Like a guy who could run it a little bit, but really could catch passes and was good making people miss in a short area. And he's a nice player. There's no question about it. 12-year career, he's probably more than just a nice player.
And that guy that every year when they got to the playoffs, it was like, all right, Kevin Faulk's going to catch 10 passes today.
Yeah.
Like, it was
just like James White.
Yeah.
Or any number of guys.
It was unbelievable.
And if James White were hurt and Sonny Michel were hurt, I don't doubt Rex Burkhead would be that guy.
Sure.
They've got a type. Pass-catching running backs. Now Damian Harris in the mix there. They've got a loaded backfield potentially up there in New England. I guess Sony had his knee scoped this offseason, but they said he's already running.
They said he's all right.
Full
yeah.
tilt is the expression yeah. That they use for him. All right, when we return in a moment, we'll take a look at the Vegas odds to win the Associated Press Most Valuable Player Award and who are some of the more strategic bets we would be interested in wagering on, or players we'd be interested in wagering on. The question of the day, presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. We're limiting this really to Twitter because that's where we posted the odd sheet from Vegas. Patrick Mahomes at 4-1, all the way down to a few guys at 300-1, and they don't do the field, apparently. If you want a guy, then you can request he be added, and they'll come up with odds for that particular guy, but they don't do a field bet. In other words, like, here's 50 guys you can bet on, or you can bet on the field, like in golf. You know, you want Tiger or the field. Those old bets, which were sucker bets, even when Tiger was at his very best, typically. But we'll get into that. Where would we cast our ballots? Nick Foles and Leonard Fournette, by the way, both going off at 200-1. If you want a little Jaguar love the next time you're in Las Vegas or any other state that takes legal sports wagering. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today, live at the bank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Tony, got this one on the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures. Great praise for Fred Taylor in the Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah Move the Sticks podcast, talking about prototype running backs yesterday, I guess, is posted. They asked, apparently, MJD and Terrell Davis, and according to this, they both heaped tremendous praise on Freddie T as the most underrated, perfectly built running back based on size, speed, and vision. Davis said he doesn't understand why Fred is not discussed as one of the greatest of all time, and the texter said it reminded him of listening to Jim Brown, who surprised many at the time that he was one of his favorites to watch. I think he said, you say he was his favorite, the top favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Jim Brown used to refer to Fred as the best running back in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
You know, and I think he probably respected that high yards per carry. For Jim Brown was like a 5.0 yards per carry guy for his career. You know, we're talking about different eras here, but regardless.
Yeah, back when Jim was the biggest guy on the field.
Right, or yeah. Big as a middle linebacker,
yeah.
but he could run. I mean, he's not big by today's standards. How big was, let's say, I'm going to say 6'2", 225. And you, what's your guess on how big Jim Brown was? I could be off on that.
Yeah, I would go 6'2", feels about right. I was going to go around 230. So
230, all right. Let's see what Pro Football Reference listed him as. 6'2", 232. So there you go. You were you won without going over. Nicely bid. But we're in the same ballpark. That's
how
a big running
Marion
back.
How big was Marion Motley?
He was a big boy.
Yeah.
But he stood out as well. I mean, that was another guy who –
you see any of the highlights of him, and he did look like he dwarfed everybody on the field. So how big was he compared to Jim?
He was 6'1", 232.
Whoa.
So he was an inch shorter, so maybe a little bit more stout. It's not like the 232-pound running back is all that common. At 6'2", that's a big guy. He would be a big running back regardless, but mm-hmm. It's not as, you know, when you see we've seen the Eric Dickersons of the world, there have been some really big running backs since that time. AP's a big dude.
No doubt.
Although I don't think he was up in the 232 range. I could be wrong about that. But regardless, I'll have to check that out. I like the move.
6'1", 220.
6'1", 220?
Yep.
All right. So, you know, Steven Jackson was massive. I would put him even bigger than 232. There have been some big ones. How big is Zeke? I bet he's got to be like 5'11". He's not one of those 6 foot. Something guys.
No, he's 6 foot 228.
All right, so and
that's pretty big.
No, it is big, and he looks massive, right?
He does,
I mean,
yeah.
All the so Jim Brown would have held up size wise in any era, but back then, the typical football player, I'm guessing offensive lineman might have been in the 265 range as opposed to the 315 range.
Fred Taylor, and I've said this kind of thing before. Fred Taylor. You know, however many years ago it was that he was going into the Pride and we were trying to put together a bunch of different, you know, production pieces, going back and looking at a bunch of plays that Fred had made. It's as much fun as I have going back and looking at any player in Jaguars history. Fred Taylor is unbelievable with what he would do on the field. I saw Tim, one of the guys there on Twitter, Jaguars Twitter, had found in an archive on a New York Giants website where he couldn't find the play. It was right at the end of the run where Fred had gone like 6 games in a row for 100 yards that year, right? And it's 98.
Didn't he end up going like 8 games?
It was
ultimately?
Something ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it was like the Giants game, he had a long touchdown run. That was basically the only run he had in that game. But I had never seen the run since it had aired live, right? Like I could kind of remember that he had a touchdown run against the Giants. But apparently some Giants fan had it archived on his site, right? So you could go back and he pulled the clip. It was an unbelievable. Like, it was just looking at it going, oh, yeah, that's Fred Taylor. Because it was a run where he got bunched up in the middle of the line of scrimmage, that jump cut to the right, and then just boom, immediately at top speed, took the angle away from like 3 different guys in the secondary to get into the end zone. Fred is, they could, as I said after I watched that play, they could play another 100 years of Jaguars football and maybe not have another running back that could do what Fred Taylor could do. Physically, he was just a freak of nature. At his size, that jump cut was lethal for defenders. It was so much fun to watch.
All right. Once again, I should be Fred Taylor's Hall of Fame speech giver or the guy trying to get him in because I'm just embellishing his numbers here. Like, according to an article after a quick search, in 2007, Fred earned his only Pro Bowl trip of his career as he ranked fifth in the AFC with 1,202 yards rushing, the only player in the NFL to record 5 consecutive 100-yard rushing games, assuming that year, and scored his 70th career touchdown along the way, setting a franchise record to passing Jimmy Smith with 69. MJD, now I believe 81. We were looking at this the other day with the lead total on that. So nice little memory lane right there. I'll have to check out the
– he had 9 in a row.
He did, okay.
Yeah, 9 in a row in 2000, and the Giants game was the last game of the season. He had the, like, 40-yard right. touchdown. He had a 13-carry, 52-yard day with the touchdown.
So I'm not getting – I'm just – my number was close. My year was off, obviously, on the run. Yeah, I thought it was more like an 8. All right, so 9 consecutive 100-yard games, pretty impressive stuff regardless. By the way, Jerry Kramer, friend of the program, finally in the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. considered maybe the certainly one of the great guards of the 1960s. How big was Jerry Kramer?
Ooh,
be height and weight for Jerry Kramer.
I'll go 5'10", 205.
6'3", 245.
Okay.
All right, we've met Jerry Kramer. I guess he sits down a lot at his advanced age. 5'10"?
I don't know.
Jerry Kramer, he's 6'3". But still, 245. This was one of the premier guards in the National Football League in the 1960s when Jim Brown was making hay. And, you know, Jim Brown at 225, when a guard, imagine if you had a, the equivalent would be like a 280-pound running back, you know, running behind a 320-pound guard. Now, something along those lines.
That'd be something.
Not going to see it. All right, let's look at some of these NFL MVP odds, if I could find the proper page. I've got a lot of them open in front of me. Mentioned that Mahomes is 4-1. I think if you're going to bet, and that's kind of the question of the day, how would you distribute your bankroll? Question presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. We give you a $1,000 bankroll, and you can wager it on as many as five or as few as one guy. You could put the whole thing on one player, but you have to wager the full $1,000. How would you break that up when you're trying to maximize your return? Because obviously only one of them can win, but do you want to spread your odds out? Would you rather take, you know, five guys at 100-1, or would you rather have one guy at 20-1?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess it all depends on your strategy. But I think the first thing you got to do, you practically have to eliminate all of these receivers and tight ends off this list.
I would.
I mean, just almost completely off the map. And only I would restrict it to the smallest slice of running backs in addition to the quarterbacks where I'm going to wager. Like, I could see Saquon Barkley having a monster year, but I can't see the Giants winning enough games for him to truly be considered the league MVP.
Mm-hmm.
He'll have a great statistical season, but I don't think they'll win enough for
Kamara,
him.
Maybe.
Maybe, but at the same
time. But
again,
it's going to be split.
Their philosophy, right, is to split it. Christian McCaffrey, now, if he was a 2,200-yard total yard guy and Carolina were a 10-win team, okay, I'll give you that. Certainly Ezekiel Elliott, if the Dallas Cowboys were to win the NFC East and make it to the postseason and Zeke, you know, led the league in rushing, I think he'd be in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how far beyond that it extends. Like, Le'Veon Bell could be a key part to helping the Jets make a significant improvement, but is it going to be enough to really garner enough MVP votes? Would they have to overtake the Patriots in the division to really win the MVP, and how likely is that to happen? So I think I would cut it down to two or three running backs at the most.
Right, and I couldn't see myself if I was going to split up my money. I couldn't. If I thought Dallas was going to have a season that was worthy of Ezekiel Elliott being an MVP candidate, I don't know how I could take Zeke at 60-1 when I can get Dak at 100-1. Like, I just don't know that I could make myself make that bet.
Especially because the quarterbacks win the award
right
much more often than anybody at this stage of the game. So there are quarterbacks that I would – like Matthew Stafford at 80-1. You can throw your money down that hole.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. I mean, what would Detroit have to do for Matt Stafford to win the league MVP? They'd have to start by probably winning the division.
Yeah, they'd have to have the bye.
Right. Probably maybe get a bye. I do believe these awards are voted on at the end of the regular season.
I do too.
And then, so anything that happens in the postseason is not a consideration. So if you go 12-4 with that Detroit Lion team, and that's the best in the division, all right, maybe you're under consideration.
And my guess, if Detroit goes 12-4, Matthew Stafford probably threw for minimum 5,000 yards.
See, I don't think so anymore, though. All they're talking about now is getting back to, or not even getting back to, but becoming more ground-oriented. Not that they're ever going to be a ground and pound. They're not going to be Seattle. You know what I mean? But they have Kerryon Johnson. They signed C.J. Anderson. They want to run the ball more because, obviously, look,
I'll believe it when I see it in Detroit.
But, you know, it's a different coaching staff
now.
And they've gone through those years when Matt Stafford was a 5,000-yard passer. And what did they get him? pretty much nothing.
Nothing, but in the vague discussion of what does it look like for Matthew Stafford to win an MVP,
if Detroit were 12 and 4
and he threw for 5,000 yards.
But my point being, I don't think it's going to happen. If they went 12-4, I don't think that's the kind of year Matthew Stafford is going to have. I think it would be because they got a much improved defense, and Kerryon Johnson had a terrific year, and I just don't know if Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones and T.J. Hockenson's enough to float a 5,000-yard boat at this time. He had Calvin Johnson back in the day.
He did.
You know, going for near $2,000 to making that kind of thing happen. Jimmy Garoppolo, don't see it. Kirk Cousins, don't see it. Here's your top group of candidates in terms of the shortest odds. Mahomes at 4-1. And I think he's going to suffer, Tony, because I think his numbers just come down, just normal regression, right? And if you're going to compare him to a 50-touchdown season, and let's say throws 39 touchdowns, which is a really good number, you're going to be like, yeah, he's, compare that to last year, is that MVP worthy? Let's give it to somebody else. I just think it's going to be hard for him. He's going to have to battle against his own perception of what he is. So I think that's a bet I would avoid. Aaron Rodgers, they love Aaron Rodgers, right? He's 8-1. If Green Bay wins the division, it is that I could see Aaron Rodgers having a season where he throws 35 touchdowns and 4 picks, because he's that guy from time to time, and getting back in the conversation. Andrew Luck, I think, is a decent bet as well. A lot of people picking the Indianapolis Colts to win the division. Let's say they are that team in the AFC South. They're 11 or 12 win team. Well, Luck's going to get all the credit there. The people are going to acknowledge the offensive line's improved, that they've, you know, added some playmakers, but that's the thing they're doing. They're adding playmakers for Andrew Luck. They've got two capable tight ends. They've got a bunch of backs they can catch a football, and they got T.Y. Hilton and, you know, Devin Funchess and Paris Campbell. I could see Andrew Luck putting up massive numbers this year. Plus, you add in the fact that he's always good to run for 3 to 5 touchdowns, seemingly padding some stats. I could definitely see him as a viable place to play some money.
Oh, sure. And look, I think with the expectations that are going to be on the Colts, that offensive line's probably the best in football going into this year, and should continue to develop up there in front of Andrew Luck. There were a lot of questions about what Luck was going to be coming back off that shoulder injury last year. But the way they ended the season last year, they're going to be a in vogue pick. Like, if there's going to be somebody writing, like, the articles that are coming out over the course of the next month and a half, as people have to fill the time between now and the start of training camp and the regular season. But the articles are going to come out. It's like, my dark horse candidate in the AFC, watch out for the Indianapolis Colts. Like, right. You're going to see a lot of that.
They're not anyone's dark horse at this point.
No.
Like, it's all been talked about.
But they're just not Kansas City or New England. You know,
or the Chargers.
Right, or the Chargers.
By the way, the next three guys are Carson Wentz, Drew Brees, and Tom Brady at 10-10 and 12-1, respectively. I like the two guys at 14-1, Phillip Rivers and Russell Wilson. Phillip Rivers, there's a sentimental factor, right? He's never been an MVP. I think he's well-liked. I know he's got that brash on-field personality. And the Chargers were really, really good last year, right?
Yep.
If you just did it based on record, and you didn't have to be a division winner, the Chargers would have had a bye last year.
Yep.
They were that good. So I could see if they go 12-4, 13-3, even if that defense is spectacular, a lot of sentiment in Phillip Rivers' camp. And likewise, I think the feeling is that Russell Wilson is a one-man gang. I don't think that's true necessarily, because they rely on that running game as much as any team, and they're very effective with Chris Carson, at least they were last year, and Rashad Penny's there as well. But they lose Doug Baldwin. If you could have a season, statistically, like Russell Wilson had last year, and they win and overcome the Rams in the NFC West, and let's say go 11-5, I could absolutely see Russell Wilson getting serious MVP consideration.
Oh, totally. If they were to win the West and he puts up 3,500 yards, 35-7 again, yeah, Russell Wilson would be right in the middle of the MVP.
Right now, my money's going on Luck, Rivers, and Wilson based on this list. If you were going to put money on a Jaguar, there are only two you can bet on, Fournette or Foles. Any reason why you wouldn't put it on Foles? Or do you think that because of the way this team wants to play, if they have a special type season, that Leonard Fournette's going to have to be an integral cog to it.
If you're going to make me bet on a Jaguar, I'm betting on Foles.
I am too, because yeah. I think the perception would
like
be.
I'm eliminating all but like two running backs from my consideration. Like Fournette, no.
But if the Jag, I think regardless, people have short memories, right?
Sure.
They're going to forget what Blake did in 2017. They're going to look at the 2018 Jaguars, which were a mess offensively. And if the Jags win 10 or 11 games, there's going to be a lot of credit given to Nick Foles. See what happens when you come in, you get a steadying hand at the quarterback position. And I'm not saying that that wouldn't be valid. I just think it would be tough for Leonard Fournette to be given absent, you know, a league-leading rushing total, you know, 1,700 yards.
Yeah, if he rushed for 2,000 yards, okay.
Right, but how likely is that expectation? Yeah. I think it's more likely that you could see Nick Foles throw 27 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, and the Jaguars win a bunch of games, and he's just really efficient, and his name gets in the conversation. I think it'd be really hard for him to win it because the statistics in today's game
it's ridiculous.
Are so overwhelming.
I went back and looked, talking about the Matthew Stafford thing. He had 5,000 yards his third year in the league, right? He had 5,000 yards and like 35 touchdowns and 7 picks. Like, he had that kind of year.
Yeah.
Was not an MVP consideration that year. They went 10-6.
Just goes to show you.
Yeah, was not an MVP.
There were times a little bit later in his career that he got talked about a little bit in the MVP conversation.
Yeah.
Right now, Luck, Rivers, Wilson. I'll have to continue to go through this list to see where else I might take a long shot. I'll put $100 on Nick Foles just to make everybody happy. All right, coming up, we've got This Date in Football, the Roland Reich Roll around the National Football League. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today live at the bank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, a little birthday time on This Date in Football History for June the 26th throughout the years. We go back to 1968. Happy 51st to Shannon Sharp, NFL tight end with the Denver Broncos for a long, long time. Then the Baltimore Ravens. He won 2 rings with the Broncos, 1 with Baltimore. Was a 7th round pick in 1990, the final round of the draft at that time. 8-4 in terms of Pro Bowls to All-Pro selection. So 8 Pro Bowl nods for Shannon Sharp. Hall of Fame inductee in 2011, thanks to 815 career catches, over 10,000 yards, and 62 touchdowns. I got this text in, Tony, and I'll tell you why it's applicable in a moment on the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures. Said, Fred Taylor is the main reason why I became a Jags fan. He was dominant but played in a small market and lost quite a few TDs in goal line situations. Happy birthday, Stacey Mack. Today is Stacey Mack's 44th birthday. I believe he scored 20 touchdowns with the Jags, maybe 22 with the Jags. We were looking up the all-time totals the other day. 19 total touchdowns, though, in his two most productive seasons, which were 2001 and 2002, back-to-back, scored 9 and 10, respectively. Played 4 years here in the city of Jacksonville. Stacey Mack is 44 years old today. Chad Pennington is 43 years old today. He was one of 4 Jets first-round picks in the year 2000, the 18th overall selection. And this may have happened to somebody else. Has anyone ever won Comeback Player of the Year award twice other than Chad Pennington? Chad Pennington had a year where he went 10-6 with the Jets, coming off of injury. He was injured quite a bit and won Comeback Player of the Year in 2006, then had a terrible year with the Jets, included more injury, went to Miami, and I believe Miami was coming off a 1-15 season at the time, and helped. I might be off on that, but it was within a couple of years of having that 1-15 campaign, led the Dolphins to 11 victories, and won his second Comeback Player of the Year award in 2008. Michael Vick, born in the state in 1980. Many would say you can't celebrate his birthday. Well, that's up to you. It is Michael Vick's 39th. He, of course, was convicted of running a dogfighting ring up in Virginia. Spent time in Leavenworth Prison. Michael Vick, the number one pick in the 2000 NFL draft, was a 4-time Pro Bowler. Likewise, he was the 2010 Comeback Player of the Year. This was after his incarceration when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles, and in 2010 won the Burt Bell Award, one of many MVP awards that are given annually. The one we've been talking about the most today is the Associated Press MVP. So Michael Vick, 39 years old today, joining Chad Pennington, Stacey Mack, and Shannon Sharp on the birthday list, and that's what we've got for you on This Date in Football History.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
It appears the Comeback Player of the Year award wasn't given by the AP in the year that Garrison Hurst won it, when it was like on a hiatus from a different source.
Okay.
But he won two.
All right.
Of whatever it was, and he would be the only other player, it would appear.
Short list.
Yeah, that would have won two Comeback Player of the Year awards. Cincinnati Bengals rookie offensive tackle Jonah Williams will miss the entire season after undergoing surgery on his shoulder after a torn labrum. He reportedly suffered the injury during the offseason program with the team. Williams was expected to come in and be the left tackle with the Bengals this season. Cordy Glenn would be the next name up for Cincinnati at that left tackle spot. Kicker Robbie Gould was asked about his trade request yesterday at a charity golf tournament that he was hosting in the Chicago area. Gould said that it's where his family and is where they want to be, and that, quote, I'm at a point in my career where my family is going to dictate the decisions that I make, end quote. Gould said that he has still not signed his $5 million tender offer from San Francisco this offseason. He continues to say that he wants to be traded. And Tom Dundon, who owns the Carolina franchise in the NHL, was the man who came in to buy and basically bail out the Alliance of American Football, at least for a couple of weeks, is seeking to get his $70 million investment in the AAF back, claiming in court that Charlie Ebersole and the league got his $70 million through, quote, misrepresentation. So we'll see what that court case looks like.
Good luck. Is there $70 million? Is there $70 left to distribute?
Who's giving you the money?
Yeah, speculation at Pro Football Talk. Keep in mind, again, Florio's a lawyer. Who's thinking like a lawyer is that, could this be a case of Dundon trying to separate himself to say, hey, look, I'm a victim here as well. Don't sue me. You know, there are a lot of different permutations. Mm-hmm. So I can't believe he thinks he's going to get $70 million out of anybody at this point in time, and probably feels like a big fat sucker. But in fact, if he was lied to and they misrepresented the financial state of the league, I suppose if there was any money to be had, he'd have a pretty good case. Just don't know if there is at this point in time. Got this on the text line. We're talking about the MVP vote. Colin said, you can get Aaron Donald at the same 100-1 as Khalil Mack. That's pretty good. Also love Russell Wilson. And then Jeff replied, it's all optics. Khalil just looks more spectacular out there. He's poised for a huge season. Sacks, tackles, forced fumbles, interceptions. Donald is limited as a defensive tackle on a defense already loaded. I would completely disagree. What's he limited by? They had 20 and a half sacks last year. Mm-hmm. He had 8 more sacks than Khalil Mack had last year. I don't know what he – I mean, people lavish praise on Aaron Donald. I think if you took a poll right now among – NFL media, and keep in mind the Associated Press is voting on this, right? So if you took a vote right now among that same group of voters and asked them just simply who's the best defensive player in football, I think Aaron Donald wins the poll. I think Khalil Mack might come in second, but I think Aaron Donald wins the poll. So it's not like he's obscure and has to overcome anything. He's already a household name, led the league with over 20 sacks last year. I think he's got an excellent chance, particularly, I mean, both teams figure to be contenders this year, mm-hmm. and I take a shot on Aaron Donald.
Look, Aaron Donald has been in the league 5 years. He's got 5 Pro Bowls. He's got 4 All-Pros. He is 3-time Defensive Player of the Year. I know Pete Prisco.
What's he missing? MVP.
Right. I know Pete Prisco put out his top 100 list last week. He had Aaron Donald number 1, which I've asked him about it. It hurt him to have to put a defensive player
number 1.
Mahomes
number 2, he loves his quarterback.
Right. I mean, it's, yeah, Aaron Donald, I would, if I had to put money down on him or Khalil Mack for a MVP, I would put it on.
Right. I don't think the optics are, I get what you're saying. When you come off the edge, it seems like you make splashier plays. At the end of the day, if Aaron Donald has 20-plus sacks again and the Rams defense and the Rams team is really good.
Yeah.
He's going to be right there under consideration.
Sure.
I'm with you. If I'd vote on a defensive player, Aaron Donald would get my money.
I think it's as good as the Rams were last year. He had 20 and a half sacks, so my play would be I'm not going to put money on a defensive guy to win league MVP. That's the way I would look at it, because I just – if that's not a good enough season to get you into the serious
right,
conversation,
was
then
he not even in the
is.
Conversation?
It didn't feel like – like, we all knew Mahomes was going to be the league MVP.
Well, he threw 50 touchdowns.
Right.
I mean,
and I'm not saying someone's going to do that again this year.
It's
but
already
be,
slanted towards a quarterback.
Right. There's going to be some quarterback that's going to throw for 4,500 yards and 40 I mean, that's just the way that the league is right now. And I can't I don't know what the defensive numbers would look like that you'd have to put up. I think that you'd have to be on a team that is going to have the bye going into the playoffs. I think that would be important for a defensive player, and push or break Michael Strahan's sack record. Like, I think that's what it would take for you to be seriously considered for a league MVP.
By the way, Mahomes got 41 out of 50 votes. Drew Brees got the other 9. So yeah, it's hard to know because they don't vote like some awards in some leagues, some sports. You get a first, second, third, and you maybe get, you know, 5, 3, and 1 point, depending on where you come in. Like, I think the NBA's all-NBA team is voted on like that. This, you get literally one vote.
You vote for a guy
who was the most valuable player, and there's no second place, there's no third place, there's no nothing. So it's hard to know where Aaron Donald – who knows? Maybe Aaron Donald would have finished second on 25, 26 ballots out there.
Maybe.
Don't know. Yeah, if I were going to still vote on one or bet on one, Aaron Donald would still be that guy. All right, 641-1010 if you want to get in on the phone lines or the text line, which is built by Lifetime Enclosures. Question of the day presented out there by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, asking you about those MVP odds. We tweeted them out. If you had a $1,000 bankroll and could bet on as many as 5 or as few as 1 potentially, how would you distribute that $1,000 bankroll? In other words, where would you cast your wagers as to who will be the Associated Press MVP of the 2019 NFL season? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Fat Tony Research Department has been hard at work over the last 7 minutes or so. And, Tony, in your research, you've discovered if you're casting your vote for the MVP or you're casting your wager as to who will end up winning the MVP, historically, you've been flushing your money if you're not voting for a quarterback or a running back or wagering on one.
Correct. Since the award has started being given out in 1961, officially by the Associated Press, there have been 4 players that were not playing quarterback or running back that have won the league MVP.
Ever.
Award. Ever. Ever. One wide receiver in the history of the league has won MVP.
His name was Jerry. You may have heard of him.
Yeah.
And so,
and one of them was a joke. Like, I feel like even the voting on it was a joke.
The Mark Mosley?
Yeah. So a place kicker won it.
I got 3. When you told me it was only 4, I knew LT had won one. Mark Mosley got it in the strike-shortened season. I think he – was he perfect that year?
I looked at it. He was 20 of 21.
Low expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a weird thing.
Well, it was the strike-shortened season, so they only played 9 games.
Right. Okay, 20 field goals in 9 games is – pretty solid production.
Like, I don't know what the stats look like that year. That I may go back and look.
I don't know. And then Alan Page won it in the early 70s.
Yeah, 1971.
Alan Page, who we've talked about this before, may have had the most successful post-NFL career out of anybody. Anybody who's ever played the game. Just a guy's list of accomplishments is ridiculous. So you can just put it this way. No tight end's ever won the award. There have been a slew of Hall of Fame tight ends that we've seen shine. I don't think I'm going to be spending any money on that George Kittle at 300-1. I don't think, you know, if Shannon Sharp and Kellen Winslow and Antonio Gates and Rob Gronkowski and Mike Ditka and all the great tight ends never won one collectively, I don't think Kittle's going to be the one to break through this year.
I don't think so.
No, I mean, it would go more towards Garoppolo, although Kittle was spectacular last year. Zach Ertz caught 116 balls. Anybody mention him for MVP last year? Is he going to top 116 catches this season? I kind of doubt it, you know. Wouldn't mind, you know, based on where I've been drafting him. But
yeah, interesting. Dan Fouts, that was one of his all-pro seasons, that strike short in 1982, going back and looking at it now.
Okay.
So why wasn't he league MVP? By the way, that's also the year Tony Dorsett went 99. That was that season.
Okay. But what did Dorsett end up? I mean,
he was around 800 yards in the 9 games.
Yeah, 9 games. That's not bad. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it probably works out to like 1,600 yards.
I'd say
season.
I'd probably throw my vote that way before a kicker.
I remember Mosley. I mean, the feel of that Redskins team was that they were invincible back then. We talked about that with Osier earlier in the week. But yeah, just kind of odd when it's all said and done. 20 out of 21. Not even perfect.
No.
from kicking the field goals. So, all right, that's where you're at on that. Quick aside, see the Yankees set the record last night with 28 consecutive games. I will be rooting for them to win, as always, today without hitting a home run because I am superstitious, Tony. And they got the mark off of 27, and they advance it to 28. That's an omen.
You wanted to stop right there.
Stop right there on 28 because there's another 28 I have in mind to pair up with that. So that's my goal for today as a complete aside apropos of nothing here. CBS did a piece, Will Brinson, 2 days ago that we haven't touched on, ranking the top five NFL players you'd pick to start a franchise and thrive over the next 10 years. I guess, are you only taking NFL players in this? Because we both talked about it. If you could have him, even knowing he's going to play college football for the next 2 years, wouldn't Trevor Lawrence be a high, high consideration?
Yeah, like, you look through the names that he had on the list, right? And Mahomes at the top makes all the sense in
absolutely
the world. Like
young
that,
as can be, just set all kinds of ridiculous passing marks.
I think my consideration for Trevor Lawrence may even start at two. Like, that's how much it feels like the conversation around him is he is the next thing, right? And so it might start as high as number two on that list.
Would have gone number one in this year's draft.
Yeah.
If he is eligible.
Yeah.
Would go, if he tore his ACL, I think he'd still go number one overall next year. Now, he's not eligible to come out next year.
No.
Right? I mean, I think that's the way they think of this. Now, if he had something like a Robert Edwards injury, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Something like, but if it was just a torn ACL that they thought, oh, yeah, this guy will be back and he'll be fine. I mean, Carson Wentz tore his ACL. He just got paid $130 million or something along those lines,
yeah.
Right? So it's not a death sentence whatsoever. He'd have to be under consideration, especially when you get down the top five that they went with, all quarterbacks, Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and obviously they're leaning towards youth here. You got to last for the next 10 years, right? Already Andrew Luck's like 30 years old, and he's had a bunch of injuries. You're not going to find Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Drew Brees on a list like this. It's too far-reaching.
That's the interesting part of this list.
Deshaun Watson's in a third. So you tell me Mahomes and Watson in the top three players that you would build a franchise around. It's just a shame the Jags never had a realistic chance at drafting either one of those guys.
Kind of is.
Ooh. Sam Darnold. Look, I'm optimistic about Darnold. If you look at him, I think from week 12 to the end of the season, had one of the best total QBRs of any quarterback in the National Football League. Now, granted, you're being selective like we were with Blake in 2017, but you're going off a rookie season. You're going to see, did he progress throughout the course of the year? He passes the eyeball test to me, but I mean, look, I'd bank on Baker Mayfield ahead of him as well. Baker Mayfield just set the record for the most touchdown passes as a rookie, and he's adding Odell Beckham Jr. He's got great weapons around him. Now, granted, in this, you're picking a guy, and he's not going to go in with Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry and David Njoku. And then Russell Wilson was the last guy. What is he, like 29-ish?
I think he's 30
Is
now.
He 30?
Yeah.
And the contention was even if he only plays eight high-quality seasons, if he wins you a Super Bowl or two, it's worth it. I would agree with that.
Yeah, he'll be 31 in November.
Okay, so that's getting on the borderline. But the honorable mentions, they did mention Luck, and they said the honorable mention plus the main concerns for them. Carson Wentz, and the concern would be injuries. He's had a bunch. Aaron Rodgers, age. How many more years is Aaron Rodgers going to play? I mean, could he play like Tom Brady? Perhaps. Does he want to? He also gets hurt more than Brady does. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Andrew Luck, but then injuries come into play. We mentioned that. Jared Goff, the second half of last year is their concern.
Okay.
And really, you know, it's Jared Goff's had an interesting career trajectory.
He really
has,
yeah.
Running hot and cold. First year, he's a bust. They moved on from Jeff Fisher. Wait a minute, maybe he's not a bust. He looks pretty good, played really well, and that whole offense was just cruising along. He did lose Cooper Kupp, which was kind of his safety blanket, for lack of a better term, a guy he felt really comfortable with on third down. But regardless, and then Josh Allen, not our Josh Allen here in Jacksonville, not the pass-rushing defensive end who everyone will wish they had on their list of a guy to build a franchise around. For sure, when he becomes only the fifth non-quarterback or running back to win AP MVP this year since 1961. All the hyperbole I could give you right there, folks. But Buffalo's Josh Allen, and the concern is accuracy. Well, that's
I
a pretty
would say
big,
so.
That's a concern when you're a quarterback. Now, granted, I see this guy. You know, he's got swagger. He's got feet. He can move. He maybe a gamer, all that stuff. Josh Allen, among the 10 best players you could build your franchise around for the next 10 years? That seems... I mean, give me a young pass rusher.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'd probably rather have Aaron Donald.
Right, than Josh Allen. Now, maybe there aren't any other young quarterbacks that you would put into that conversation because you already took a bunch of the good ones off the board here.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, like, Kyler Murray? I think I'd rather have Kyler Murray than Josh Allen.
I think I would, too. Sight unseen, having never played it down. I don't know if he was – I would assume he's eligible for this. And it would be tough to put him in there – having not seen him play at all, but I think the NFL's evolving. And I think, you know, everything you hear about Kyler Murray out in Arizona is that obviously he should pick up the offense. Well, it's an offense he knows.
Sure.
But that he's really in command of things. Larry Fitzgerald's been impressed, all that. You just don't hear that kind of talk. I mean, Josh Allen, he's their guy in Buffalo. They rally around him. All that's fine and dandy. It just doesn't strike me as – I mean, NFL GMs picking any player in the league to build a franchise around. Look, obviously, quarterbacks are going to go hot and heavy. I don't know. I'd have to start going through the teams to see who else I could come up with before I pull the trigger on him.
Yeah, like the Josh Allen just wouldn't come to mind. Like, even if it was going to go 10 deep, that's not a player that would come to mind for me. I'm not saying that obviously he would for somebody else because it came up for Will Brinson, and I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I know Prisco loves him. So I wouldn't be surprised if he'd have him in that kind of conversation, too. I wouldn't.
Let's go quickly through the teams here, right? And if you're going to go with another quarterback, and this because this is kind of the top 10, right? It's the top five plus the top five honorable mentions. Brady's ruled out because it's a 10-year deal.
Yes. Whoever Belichick picks next, I would take over Josh Allen.
Maybe, right? Maybe, or did they just get lucky? I mean, it's not like they knew Brady was going to be Brady.
No, I hear you, but they have just done a good job of developing it.
Who do they have? Who's the one guy they had? Kevin Reynolds? They've had a few.
They've missed some, yeah.
I think I'm off on the name there.
Yeah,
Kevin O'Connell?
O'Connell, yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, I don't know if I'm willing to go that far. I might take Josh Allen over sight unseen without even knowing who that quarterback's going to be. Because all right, let's go through. New England, too old. Miami, no, right? You're not going to bet on either one of those guys. The Jets, you already have Darnold in there. Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen, accuracy issues there as well. He did win. I'd go with the arm talent probably of Josh Allen. They're both mobile guys. I'd probably go with him over Lamar Jackson.
I liked Lamar more last year, and I didn't see anything to change my mind.
Okay.
I mean, he led a playoff team.
So that's close, though.
Yeah, that's close.
Pittsburgh, Roethlisberger's old. We already had Cleveland in there. Cincinnati, you're not going to take Dalton. Already got Deshaun Watson. Luck's an honorable mention. You're not going to take Mariota. You're not going to take Foles. You're not going to take Rivers, too old. You're not going to take Flacco. You're not going to take Derek Carr, I wouldn't think. Dak? What about
Dak? I'd take
Dak. I'd probably take Dak over Josh Allen. Wentz already an honorable mention. Too soon to know in Washington with Dwayne Haskins.
But I'd take Haskins.
You'd take Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
Trubisky? What about Trubisky versus Josh Allen?
That's interesting.
That's pretty close, right? I think they're similar type guys. They have accuracy issues. They're really good
athletes. One of them's
athletes.
in a vastly superior, offensively
got a much better offense,
team.
Right? And he's got a great defense to rely on to keep him in games. That's in the conversation.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins getting no love, and he's right in that, I would think, in that Russell Wilson age range, mm-hmm. right? And understandably so. You're not going to take Stafford for another 10 years, I don't think. You're not going to take Breeze. What about Matt Ryan? He's
how
like 32, 33.
That's
probably an age consideration there, but I might take him anyway.
I think I would.
Because he's going to be really good for 5 or 6 years, and he may end up, if he doesn't get hurt, playing like Brady, playing into his 40s. It's certainly possible. So I think I'd take Ryan. Wouldn't take Cam, too many injuries. Wouldn't take Jameis, too inconsistent. Goff, he was on the honorable mention list, mm-hmm. already had Russell Wilson. Garoppolo, what about Garoppolo? What has he really proven?
Yeah, I don't know. But
is he going to be durable enough for the next 10 years? I don't know.
I'd probably...
It's not a slam dunk, right?
No.
I mean, when you go through and do this, I think you find out that, okay, Josh Allen's not that crazy if you're going to go all quarterbacks here, and that's pretty much what GMs would do
yeah.
if they're starting a franchise. It's not absurd to say he might be the 10th best guy.
Yeah, there's probably three or four more that I'd have ahead of him. But so he wouldn't be in my 10, but I don't think it's nuts to have him in.
Right, and again, this is not the 10th best quarterback in the National Football League. It's the guy if you're going to have – as the anchor of your franchise for the next 10 years.
Right.
Right, which is why.
And, you know, I'm including Trevor Lawrence is on my list.
Oh, I would take him too. Are you kidding me?
Like, if I'm making this list.
Would you take Tua over Josh Allen? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I don't either.
The size scares me.
It does me too. And look, Kyler Murray's size, that doesn't scare me because it's a style of play thing. Like, I think in that wide open kind of deal where you're looking for him to make hay with his feet, you know, when the running lanes pop up, I think he could be, I don't know. I don't know why the size bothers me more with Tua than it does with Kyler.
Yeah, I don't know, but it does.
It does for me too, right?
For some reason, yeah.
Maybe because I think Tua just wants to be more of a classic pocket passer.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, Trevor probably.
For sure.
Trevor, Dak, and Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
I would definitely
take Matt Ryan over him, too.
Just, and Matt Ryan would be
because you're going to get premium years at him. Even if you get a half dozen, I think you're going to get some really good years. Maybe an MVP-type run again in him. All right, we will come back. We'll take a look at some of the wagers you would place if you were so inclined. If you had a $1,000 budget based on the NFL Associated Press MVP odds for the National Football League's upcoming season, who would you split your money on, or would you put it all on one guy? We'll look at some of the candidates, and we'll recap who we would be backing in that particular horse race as well. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, coming down the home stretch here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at the bank. This one on the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures. It says, if the Jaguars go 12-4, win the division, Nick Foles throws for 4,500 or more yards, 30 touchdowns, and fewer than 10 interceptions, he'd certainly be in the running for MVP.
I don't think so.
I do. I just don't know how likely those numbers are. I was going to say if my aunt peed standing up, she'd be my uncle. There are a lot of things that if this happened would be true. I don't expect him to approach those numbers.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford had that plus 500 yards, doing exactly like all the conditions that you just put out there, and he wasn't in the five guys that I saw considered that year.
In this instance, you've got a guy who has, you know, was much talked about. Guy who changed teams, Super Bowl MVP, had the whole Foles versus Wentz debate, had the whole Blake Bortles saga, had the Jaguars sink to the depths of 5-11 last year. If he added 7 wins to the bottom line, set a franchise record in passing yards, because that's what those numbers would indicate.
Sure.
Blake threw for 4,400-something. 30 touchdowns, only been done once in franchise history, and had fewer than 10 interceptions, I think Foles would be in the conversation. I'm not saying he'd win it, but I do think you'd see him on some of those NFL live countdown shows, whatever, kicking his name around in the top five kind of area. I could definitely see that. Under those circumstances, I don't think this offense is going to give him the chance to produce those kind of numbers.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect it. And I think it would be, for him, I think even accomplishing all that, he'd be kind of on the borderline.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I could – my point is a lot of guys would be in the running if they threw for 4,500 yards, led their team to a 12-4 record, 30 touchdowns plus,
sure,
and fewer than 10 interceptions. That not going to happen all that often, right? It just those are pretty rarefied numbers to hit all those kind of marks.
There was one player in the league who hit all those numbers last year.
Russell Wilson?
Matt Ryan.
Was it there you go, Matt Ryan. I told you I'd take him over Josh Allen. Give me the stat line for Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan threw for 4,924 yards, 35 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
Okay, see, I think he could have that MVP-type season. A lot of people think Atlanta's having a big bounce-back year in the one-loss column. They fell off after going to the Super Bowl, really beefed up that offensive line. He's got pieces there, second year for Calvin Ridley, still got Sanu. Austin Hooper's kind of coming into his own. Obviously, Julio tops the chart. So he could put up some, you know, similar numbers to that. It all comes then, are you winning games, right?
Yeah.
And Matt Ryan's already on the radar as being one of the better quarterbacks in the National Football League. I do think I would put $100 of my $1,000 on Aaron Donald after thinking about it. Because I understand how rare it's been historically.
Yeah.
But it almost feels like it did, what was it, 98 with the Charles Woodson thing. Like, there's a little bit of a groundswell. Like, hey, why isn't this guy talked about in the MVP or, in that case, the Heisman discussion? Why couldn't a defensive player win? I could almost see one of those types of years. Maybe if you had four or five quarterbacks all kind of canceling each other out. Right, and you had Aaron Donald, and the Rams were right back there with a 12 or 13 win season, and he did make a run at the single season sack record, and he posted another 20 plus sack season. I could see that. I'd be willing to spend maybe a tenth of my bankroll on Aaron Donald.
Yeah, I don't
think
Houston was ever good enough
for J.J. Watt to get that.
Yeah, I think he was good enough, but I don't think Houston was ever, like, the Rams are in a position where you would expect them. It wouldn't surprise you at all if they're the one or two seed in the NFC, right? Like, that wouldn't be a surprise,
right,
for the Rams to have that kind of season again. And if he's approaching those kind of numbers on that kind of team, I think that's what it takes for a player to win that.
And if, let's say, Todd Gurley, because of whatever's going on in his knee,
yeah,
let's say he gets two-thirds of the workload this year, right? So his numbers are not eye-popping like they've been. He doesn't score nearly 20 touchdowns. Maybe he's a 1,200-yard 10 touchdown guy, something like that, more pedestrian. And you say, okay, clearly Aaron, because you almost had the dueling Gurley versus Donald,
right?
How good they were on either side of the football.
And you go back and look, the 86 Giants were a Super Bowl champion. That's the year that Lawrence Taylor won the award. Alan Page, I just went back and looked, the Minnesota Vikings that year were 11-3. Like, I think that you have to have that kind of combination where you are approaching historic numbers,
sure,
and on a just completely dominant team for a defensive player to have any chance.
And there may, I may be foolish because there may be writers that say, you know what, they've got Defensive Player of the Year award, they can win,
right,
that, you know, and so he's going to get that. And like J.J. Watt won three of those, by the way, along the way. But Duval Doom still thinks he's highly, highly overrated. Quickly, Tony, before we get to some of the people that others are backing in the MVP race, NFL.com yesterday did breakout pass rushers, of which the first one listed was the Jaguars draft pick Josh Allen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they predicted 10 sacks for him in his rookie season. We'd take that. I would sign up for that right now.
Sure.
They did a similar one today with Terrell Davis. Yesterday was Willie McGinnis writing it. Today's Terrell Davis writing about the position he knows best, and that is running back set to break out in 2019. So as you rub your palms together with anticipation, wondering, will someone from, what would it be, the 2017 draft class make the cut? Why, yes. And his name is Dalvin Cook of the Minnesota Vikings. Projecting him for 1,150 yards and 12 total touchdowns. His question is, can he stay healthy? I mean, even more so than Leonard Fournette. Can Dalvin Cook stay on the field? Ronald Jones selected as one of the breakouts, which, by the way, if you buy that, if you're drafting right now, you get him in the double-digit rounds, right? Peyton Barber's not a special player in Tampa. Bruce Arians is in, got a new head coach, new offensive coordinator in Byron Leftwich. Maybe if you believe in Ronald Jones' talent coming out of USC, maybe you could see that happening. He was so miserable last year. Couldn't break a tackle, couldn't catch the football.
Couldn't break a lineup.
Couldn't do it. No,
yeah.
Right. Couldn't do anything. And then Rashad Penny. I could absolutely see that if he gets the touches. But Chris Carson looked like a beast last year. You know, and it's kind of like one of those situations when you get a guy, well, you know, Philip Lindsay in Denver. Okay, he's an undrafted guy. Yeah, he's looked good in the offseason, whatever. Well, guy went out there and performed. As long as Chris Carson's getting the job done, I think Seattle will continue to have somewhat of a close to a 50-50 split, which would be an increase for Rashad Penny. He's projecting him for 800 yards rushing and 8 touchdowns, which, based on his rookie season numbers, would be a bit of a breakout.
Yeah, the league has changed, right? I mean, I'm looking at it right now. There were 9 players who had 1,000 yards rushing last year. Chris Carson's one of them.
Yeah.
He's 5th in the league
in
rushing last year. So, yeah.
All right, give us some of the candidates people are putting their hard-earned money on to win MVP.
Yeah, here's what we got from JagFan15. 250 for Tom Brady, 250 on Breeze, 250 on Patrick Mahomes. Now, we only gave you 500, but whatever. 200.
No, we gave him 1,000.
Oh, we gave him 1,000.
Yeah.
Big Ben gets 200, and then 50 on Zeke.
Okay, I don't think those are bad bets. There's the,
no.
There's the whole, can Brady rally the troops one more time, you know, without Gronk and da-da-da.
Like, if I was splitting it up, you know, if you're splitting it up, I would look at it and say, how much would I have to put down on Mahomes to get my money back, right? Like, if I'm going to split it up compared to the other guys that I would put the money down on. So you'd have to mess with it a little bit, because I don't want to, you know, put 200 down on Patrick Mahomes, get 800 back on my $1,000 investment.
Right.
Not worth it. Like, you'd have to play around with the numbers a little bit. From Deadman, we got 250 on Mahomes, 250 on Brady, 250 on Rodgers, and then 250 on Roethlisberger. From Crash, 300 on Russell Wilson, 299 on Saquon Barkley, 200 on Carson Wentz, 200 on Drew Brees, and $1 on Josh Lambeau to win MVP. He would only be the second kicker to win a league MVP. And then from Scott, 200 on OBJ, 100 for Andrew Luck, 200 on Gurley, 200 on Donald, and then 300 on Juju Smith-Schuster. I can't imagine if I was going to split up my money, Drew Brees not getting a chunk of it.
Yeah, and I was looking at his numbers, and 32 touchdowns, 5 picks. Outstanding, right? But he threw for less than 4,000 yards. They're becoming more of a run-oriented team. But I do think there's the sentiment factor as well.
Like we said, like Mahomes and Drew Brees were the ones that we know got votes last year.
Right, and you feel that the Saints got robbed in the playoffs, right? Does Drew Brees lead him? He was 13-2 as a starter last year. Does he do something similar? I'd probably, my final tally, I'm going to give 200 to each of these guys. I'm going Andrew Luck, Philip Rivers, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, and Aaron Donald. Those are my 5 that I'm going to bet on June 26th.
I'd probably go 200 apiece. I would Luck, Wentz, Brees, Rivers, and probably Russell.
All right, so we're very similar. You're just moving my Aaron Donald money onto Carson Wentz's back, and we all know where the real MVP of that squad is.
So we got on the
suiting up in Jacksonville, Florida. Quickly, somebody asked on the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures, that how big was Derrick Henry compared to Jim Brown?
Mm-hmm.
1 inch, 15 pounds bigger. Derrick Henry looks like a Mack truck on feet.
I'm really surprised by that, actually.
I thought he'd be much bigger, right? I mean, so imagine Derrick Henry, though, in some of those 1960s clips. You're not that far off from what Jim Brown was terrorizing defenses in the National Football League. 1 inch taller and 15 pounds heavier, at least their official listed weight.
Whew,
I bet Derrick Henry's bigger than that listed weight. He's listed
probably
at 237.
Yeah, he seems bigger than 237.
He seems 250 is what he seems. But, you know, he picks him up and puts him down pretty good nonetheless. Let's check in with XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings come with a heaping side of peace of mind, not to mention the free chips and salsa, delivery, and setup. Visit moescateringfl.com.
Leon Searcy joining us here for Crosstalk today. And Leon, what would it take for an offensive lineman to ever win a league MVP, buddy?
This is never going to happen. Yeah, it's absolutely never going to happen. I think the only person that may have come close is probably Munoz. I think Munoz may have come close or got consideration, but you're never going to get offensive lineman to win MVP.
Yeah, no stats, man. I just can't imagine anyone would ever do it. They've given it to a kicker. This seems like disrespect to me.
Oh, that is a slap in the face. That is a slap in the mouth.
They've given it to a kicker. Why not an offensive lineman? What do you guys got coming up on primetime today?
We're going to count down the top 5 defensive linemen of all time in Jacksonville Jaguars history. And we're going to have my former teammate on at 12:30, Kevin Hardy, the great Kevin Hardy, on at 12:30.
That's pretty sweet. He was one of the – they had a couple guys in 99 that had the double-digit sack season. Kevin Hardy was like the answer to a trivia question for a long time in Jacksonville, the last guy to have double-digit sacks. That'll be cool catching up with Hardy.
Yeah, we definitely utilized him in 1999. He had a Pro Bowl year.
Yeah, that 99 defense. Woo, My goodness, Leon. All right, we'll be listening, buddy.
All right, sounds good.
That's coming up next, XL Primetime from noon to 3 right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Leon Searcy alongside Ryan the Hacker Green, Joe Cowart, and Matt Hayes, I believe, out on assignment today doing some college football work. But they'll be coming
Maddie's
up from
here.
Noon to 3.
Maddie's Matt's here? Yes, sir.
Matt's
He's
here.
Back.
I thought I saw him on a flight last night. That's right. What I thought I saw on social media. I know he was waiting in an airport somewhere.
He was probably on a private plane because he's back.
Yeah, tweeting with some fans back and forth. So that'll do it for us here on Jaguars Today. We'll be back with you tomorrow, and we'll try to find another assortment of topics to get into. The betting one, that's interesting. Yeah, I can't imagine splitting up my money on that and not including Drew Brees in it, just because I think he probably has the best team in the NFC, and he was second in the voting last year when everything is said and done. That'll do it for us today. For Mike Dempsey, for Tony Smith, for Emmanuel Thalerin, we'll talk to you again tomorrow right here on Jaguars Today from 10 to noon on 1010XL.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go. Two more!